Welcome to The Backbone, a journey inside finance at a startup. I'm your host, Shubham Datta, at Shubham on Twitter. On The Backbone, we're obsessed with finance and operations at startups. We take a close look at finance functions within various startup companies by talking to finance leaders that are in there day in and day out. We chat startup finance, metrics, operations, and everything in between. Joining me on this episode of The Backbone is Mark Jarvie, VP of Finance at Drop. Drop is a consumer app that is replacing wallets full of loyalty cards. By linking any credit or debit card, you can earn Drop points and instantly redeem them for gift cards to favorite brands such as Amazon and Starbucks. Mark is the former head of finance at ShowMe, a Canadian video streaming service that was backed by Rogers and Shaw. He has experience building finance teams from scratch and successfully scaling them. He had previously worked with Ernst & Young in both their audit and corporate finance practices while obtaining his Chartered Professional Accountant designation. And so without further ado, let's hear from Mark himself, VP of Finance at Drop. Good morning, Mark. Thanks for joining me on The Backbone. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get started right away. Your career started at EY's audit group. Promptly after that, you moved into corporate finance at EY. And from EY, then you went to Rogers, where you were the head of finance at ShowMe, a position then you left to become the VP finance at Drop. So talk to me about your path into tech and how it all started for you.
Yeah, for sure. And thanks, Shubham, for having me on the podcast. So my career started, you know, like most accountants. I joined Ernst & Young right out of school. I was actually working in the Kitchener-Waterloo office. So, you know, at the time joining Ernst & Young there, you know, what was happening in the marketplace, you know, RIM and BlackBerry was obviously one of the largest Canadian companies, tech companies at the time. And, you know, OpenText was just kind of, you know, scaling to you know, the levels that they are today. So, you know, although with Ernst & Young, we were kind of, you know, a generalist, you know, seeing different industries, just, you know, being around the tech space in Kitchener-Waterloo at the time was just a phenomenal opportunity. So really I had some visibility and some insights into the tech scene kind of right from the beginning of my career. And again, you know, during this time, a lot of students were coming out of the University of Waterloo and starting a lot of, you know, startups, which today are now kind of sizable Canadian companies. So that was kind of my original start into kind of my accounting finance career. As you alluded to, you know, I was given an opportunity to move from the Kitchener office to Toronto, where I did join the corporate finance group. And really, I saw it as a phenomenal opportunity to kind of really build out kind of, you know, my finance toolkit, for kind of lack of a better word, and really kind of move beyond just the auditing side of the business and you know, get some exposure into some M&A advisory and other things like that. And as you alluded to, you know, I ended up joining Rogers. And it's quite a funny story with that one. I was actually recruited over there for what I was told was kind of a top secret job.
Oh, nice.
They alluded to, you know, the concept of wanting to launch something, you know, that was kind of video based. But really, at no point was I explicitly told during the process, you know, that it would become ShowMe, which, for those that may not know what it is, because now unfortunately it's shut down. It was kind of like a Canadian Netflix service. So, you know, throughout the process, I was excited about the opportunity, and I kind of took a leap of faith. But it was an interesting opportunity, and got in there kind of right at the beginning of ShowMe's launch.
Gotcha. And we'll dive a bit into that later on, kind of your path into ShowMe and a lot of the things that you learned there. But and then from ShowMe, you joined your current position as the VP of Finance at Drop. So talk to me about that transition and what that's been like for you so far.
Yeah. So Drop, for those that may not know, is kind of a loyalty reward application. So what we do is when users download the app, what they're prompted to do is kind of link their credit and their debit cards. And then as you go and spend with, you know, brands that we're associated with, we kind of issue you our own kind of currency. And so we call those Drop points. So after kind of spending and earning these Drop points from, you know, a variety of brands and different vendors, what we allow you to do is kind of like seamlessly and very easily redeem those Drop points via our app for a variety of gift cards. And so anywhere from, you know, Amazon to Starbucks are some of the vendors that we work with to provide these rewards. So, you know, really what we're trying to do with Drop is, you know, eliminate the need to hold, you know, numerous loyalty cards. Mm-hmm. You know, this stat may be a little bit dated, but I think in the US, you know, the average household has something like over 30 loyalty programs. And can imagine, you know, a lot of those are tied to gas and grocer and things like that. But, you know, the benefit for us is, again, you just link your debit and credit cards and you just go in and spend. There's no need to pull out any cards at the checkout. Again, like really, you don't need to think about, you know, having to carry around those cards and make sure you have them when you go shopping. And really that's kind of the aim of Drop, is just to make everything very seamless. And again, to provide an experience where you can redeem your points much quicker than, let's say, kind of an Aeroplan where, you know, you may save up for a year and only to kind of redeem it for a toaster. So again, I think we're thinking a little bit different about the loyalty and reward space. And again, I think it's kind of reflective of the, you know, the users that have decided to jump onto Drop.
For sure. And just, you know, to add on to that, because I've used Drop as well, these Drop points are in addition to any kind of loyalty program that your credit card offers themselves. So if your credit card, for instance, offers cash back, you still get that cash back, but then these Drop points are added on top of that. Like it's a bonus, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. So I think we were using like the slogan kind of, we're supercharging your debit and your credit card. So you're right. Not only can you earn points by using, you know, your certain credit card, which may have its own kind of points program to it, and also spending with certain brands who may have loyalty, we're almost kind of a third level. So again, it's really a great opportunity, free of charge. And you know, at this point, we're almost, I think, just approaching 2 million users in Canada and the US. Oh, wow. So I think it's great to kind of see that momentum and folks really kind of, you know, take on our product and continue to use it on a daily basis.
For sure. Yeah, that's great. You know, 2 million consumers using that all the time. And it's really, like you said, a win-win for the consumer, because they just connect it and they're spending anyways and might as well just get some additional rewards on top of that for it. So I want to spend a bit more time talking about Drop. Drop has a various stakeholders on both sides of its product. So we talked about the consumer side, you know, the 2 million consumers who are rewarded for their purchases. But Drop also allows brands like Starbucks and Amazon, like you mentioned, and, you know, Casper, Under Armour, Body Shop, to name a few, to acquire and engage customers in one place. And so as the finance leader, how do you balance the different sets of stakeholders, and how do you think about any kind of key considerations when the company is making product and decisions and things like this? Talk to me a little bit about that aspect of balancing a variety of different stakeholders.
Yeah, and I think that's a great question, and you know, that's something that I kind of, you know, fight with every single day. Is you know, is it really a focus on the brands and giving them, you know, a great opportunity to reach out to our customer base, or is it the customers? And I think, you know, we continue to kind of go back and forth on that. And I think if you were to kind of ask, you know, Mark, you know, myself 5 years ago, kind of before really getting into the tech space and really kind of understanding the B2C, I would say, you know, revenue, focus on that. Let's go and get it. But now that I've been, you know, in the tech space for a few years here, you know, I've, especially from a finance side, you know, I really now understand how kind of the B2C market works. And I think, you know, Drop, you know, at an early stage made the right decision to kind of focus solely on the customers and really, you know, make sure that the experience for them was seamless. And again, really get our users engaged with the product. And by way of having people who are excited about Drop, using Drop on a daily basis, I think that naturally we've just attracted some phenomenal brands. And I think you mentioned, you know, a few of them there. So, you know, as we continue to scale and to grow, you know, we do kind of pride ourselves on our ability to really kind of provide a personalized, approach to the app. And again, we don't want to kind of dilute, you know, the experience with just, you know, volume of offers. So, you know, we've been very fortunate, you know, given our growth, you know, as brands approach us, again, we have been, you know, quite picky in who we decide to go to and how we roll it out. Because at the end of the day, we're focused on the customers. We want to make sure that, again, that people are getting relevant offers that kind of coincide with their lifestyle and how they spend. So really, again, I think that would be the focus. You know, it's more revenue is important, but I think at this point in our growth cycle, again, we're focused on the customer experience, you know, making sure that they're happy, enjoying the product and continue to come back to that. So, you know, revenue right. will come, but again, you know, user growth for us is the most important.
Gotcha. And so it's that balancing act, right? Like you mentioned, for consumers, it is free. It, you know, there's no cost to just get rewarded on top of your credit and credit card rewards. Revenue generation happens behind the scenes. So, you know, when I open up the Drop app as a consumer, that's what I see. And that's really the face of the company, if you will. But then behind the scenes, you're working with these brands who are approaching you to put rewards on your platform, and they are the ones who are ultimately generating revenue for Drop. And so it's that, I guess, balancing act of, okay, it's free for the consumers, but you also have to make sure you're catering and tailoring to the brands and the companies who are actually paying you for Drop. Has that ever posed a challenge so far?
No, I imagine in the near future it will be, you know, especially as we continue to scale. You know, I think we've, again, the, you know, the number of offers that we have on our service right now, I think is kind of, you know, the optimal amount. You know, we haven't overloaded our customers with, you know, just a whole catalog of offers. But again, you know, when people come on, it's not just, you know, one or two or three offers kind of tailored to their lifestyle. So, you know, we've been very fortunate where we haven't had an issue like that. I think, you know, when we work with brands, they recognize that most of our user base are millennials. So really, it's attracting companies who are tied with that kind of, you know, demographic, have seen kind of, you know, their own customer base maybe change over the last few years, and view Drop as another kind of, you know, marketing vehicle. You know, when you think about kind of the paid social space over the last year, you know, Facebook costs in some places have, you know, almost gone up 50%. And I think, you know, marketers are looking for another opportunity to really engage with the millennial demographic. Again, I think, you know, we attract brands that are relevant to our users. And again, we've been very fortunate in that fact.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. Want to switch gears now back to your experience at ShowMe. And you know, even there, if I think about what you're doing now and at ShowMe, again, ShowMe was the front of ShowMe is consumers. That's how they're interacting with the app and the product. But behind the scenes, you have probably partnerships and relationships with publishers as well as media companies and things like that. So, you know, you were one of the earliest employees at ShowMe, and you alluded to this saying that when you had joined, they were saying that this was going to be some secret or new initiative that was coming up. And then you were also one of the last employees to leave ShowMe. So first of all, talk to me about your time at Shomi and how that process was when you ultimately found out that this product that you or team that you were going to be joining at Rogers was Shomi.
Yeah, and so Shomi was kind of one of the first, experiences outside of the firm that I had. And it started off as being kind of a Rogers-only place. So when I joined, I actually joined Rogers, and they were kind of looking to kind of go into the video on demand market kind of on their own. So, you know, the first part of my year there with Rogers was really kind of figuring out the business case, you know, figuring out the marketplace. Netflix had just launched in Canada back in 2011 and was growing quite quickly. So, as we worked through the business case and figure out, you know, how much money it was going to take to take on the incumbent Netflix, it was quickly decided that we needed to bring on some partners. So, after bringing in various telcos and some other, large Canadian entertainment companies, what was decided was that, you know, Rogers and Shaw aligned the best with regards to the vision and the execution for how Shomi would be rolled out. And that's when Shomi kind of became its own entity. So, I think I was kind of an employee kind of 22, 23 within the organization. And as you alluded to, you know, we were in market or growing for about 2.5 years. We grew to about 130 employees. Unfortunately, given, you know, a lot of things that were going on with our partners at the time, there was just a decision jointly made between the two partners to wind down the service. So, it was great to have, you know, access to capital to be able to kind of go after Netflix. So, you know, as you can imagine with a mm-hmm. big name brand, a strong platform, it took us, you know, quite a bit of work to get out there, get the Shomi brand, visible and making people aware of our service. We were ramping, very well on the user side. The problem was, you know, Netflix just continued to do what Netflix does right now. And again, they're kind of a global phenom right now. It was a great opportunity from the finance side. Again, you know, I was there to kind of put through all the processes from the ground up, you know, really kind of, you know, think through how I would scale as a finance team. But unfortunately, again, you know, with a lot of things going on with our partners, the service was shut down in late 2016.
Startups and early stage kind of technology companies also kind of come and go with the times, and sometimes, you know, there isn't product market fit or there are some other challenges outside the scope of the company, and they're also forced to shut down. And so what learnings would you take away from Shomi that you would provide as kind of advice to founders or finance leaders to think through regularly, maybe do their best to prevent this kind of thing from happening and continue to operate as a going concern known in the accounting space?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. As I talk to people about, you know, my experiences with Shomi, I said, you know, it was an unfortunate end to you know, what I thought was a great product and a great team that we had. But, you know, when I think about it from a career perspective, you know, I was, you know, a little bit fortunate to kind of see it from start to end, but it's one of those things, you know, I've seen it once and I never want to have to ever see it again. So right. I think, you know, some of the learnings I've thought about, you know, especially from the finance side is, you know, don't underestimate kind of the resources needed to ever kind of unseat like an incumbent. So I think, we went into the market, you know, obviously with a strong presence through our investors, Rogers and Shaw. Again, we were spending, solid marketing dollars to really build our brand awareness. And I believe, you know, one of the Canadian marketing magazines called us marketer of the year. And even with all that, you know, positive press and growth of our brand name, you know, it still wasn't enough to really kind of, you know, tackle what Netflix was doing here in Canada. So I think that would be one. Again, just don't underestimate the need for resources if you're kind of stepping into a market where there is a clear number one. I think another one that I've seen, you know, with Shomi and kind of moving forward here is, you know, more for the founders and the operational folks, you know, don't be afraid to just launch a product, whether it's a full product or a feature release. I think, you know, a lot of folks get caught up in the, you know, the paralysis by analysis kind of concept. You know, with ShowMe, it was a little tough because both our investors obviously had, you know, a high level of you know, reputational risk that they had to really, you know, think through before ever launching a product. So, you know, ShowMe probably got rolled out a little bit later than you know, we would have liked, you know, and especially during that time in the Canadian market, you know, launching and just getting your name out there was very important. So I think for, you know, smaller companies that are able to roll out features, you know, with a user base that's maybe a little bit more accepting for experimentation, again, you know, that'd be another kind of learning that I had is just, you know, don't be afraid to just get something out there and see how it performs. And I guess right. The last one is, you know, just really figure out who your kind of quote unquote, you know, power users are, from an early stage. You know, figure out what keeps them on the service, you know, figure out, you know, what really makes them, you know, sticky, to the product and again, heavy users of it. Once you're able to really figure out that kind of demographic or that subset of your users, again, then it's, you know, try to acquire more of those. I think that's really important. You know, a lot of folks get caught up in just onboarding users at any cost. But I think if you can take a step back and really think through, you know, who are the best users, what are they doing, and why are they using the product like they are, I think just having those insights would be, you know, very important for any company as they look to scale.
For sure. It's about almost like turning those power users into evangelists for your company or your product. And the best way to market is word of mouth. And if you can turn your users into marketers that you don't have to pay for, then that's really a great advice there. So right. Thanks for that, Mark.
Yeah.
So now I want to ask for last question before we jump into our quickfire round. And that is, in your opinion, what is the importance of the finance function at a technology company?
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, very important. And obviously I'm a little biased with my answer, but I think, you know, if you're a founder and you're scaling and you're thinking about your finance function, I think there is a right time to bring somebody on board. You know, sometimes, you know, finance people are brought in, you know, quite early, which I think is fine. But if you're a founder, you know, just be able to ensure that they can wear many hats because, you know, in the early stage of companies, again, finance isn't a full-time activity. And I think you see a lot of great consultants out there who are kind of, you know, quote unquote, you know, part-time CFOs, you know, who are able to kind of, you know, cover off any needs that you may have, at least until a point where you're scaling to a certain level of, you know, sizable revenue, or you're kind of looking to go out and do, you know, your big first kind of Series A raise. I think that's a time where founders should maybe kind of, you know, rethink what the internal finance function looks like. But, you know, I think, you know, finance can really come in at any stage. Obviously, the earlier, the better. But again, if somebody does come in, you know, before any significant raise, I think like the most important thing is just to make sure that they can wear many hats and you know, just go beyond just the numbers and really help the company scale.
Makes a lot of sense. So what I like to do now is jump into our quickfire round. The way this works is I'll ask you a couple of questions. You'll have 10 to 15 seconds to respond to each. How does that sound?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So what is your go-to online resource for all things startup finance related?
That's a good one. I think actually one of your colleagues, Mark McLeod, used to have a blog called Startup CFO, and you know, I think that was a great resource for me as I entered the tech space, the startup space, to really think about, you know, how to juggle the startups versus the finance. But aside from that, I love to kind of stay on top of news. So using TechCrunch and kind of our Canadian news tech news publication BetaKit, usually those are the kind of the resources that I love to go to.
Nice, right on. And what's your favorite productivity hack?
I'm all about kind of to-do lists. You know, I think traditionally I always used to kind of manually write them down, but you know, here at Drop we use a service called Quip, which is essentially kind of an online, you know, electronic to-do list or a place where you can share notes. So it's kind of like Google Docs, but with a little bit more sophistication to it. So that's where I kind of manage my to-do list and also the to-do list of my team.
Nice. I actually use Quip myself and at work. The show notes that I prepare for the Backbone are also prepared on Quip. So there you go. A little bit as well. One thing you don't leave the office before finishing.
Usually what I try to do at the end of the day is just kind of look to tomorrow's calendar. I think it's really important, you know, as I leave the office, just to really, you know, figure out what I need to achieve in the next day and really not to be surprised by anything. So usually I'll just kind of review my calendar. I understand kind of what I'm trying to get out of tomorrow. And then that's it for me.
Nice. And what's one tech jargon that makes you cringe?
I think maybe one that's more kind of specific to you know, the app space or to a B2C company. I've heard the term gamification kind of thrown around quite a bit. So obviously, yeah. You know, gamification being where you kind of take different steps or a different process and break it into different steps and kind of reward people at each of those ones. I think, you know, it's right. It's a great term in the right context, but you know, sometimes it can be a little overused.
Right on. I've for sure have heard that quite a bit. What's the best advice you've received so far in your career?
Yeah, great question. I think probably the one that resonates with me is really just kind of get comfortable with the unknown. I think when you come out of the audit firms, you know, when you walk into an audit, everything's, you know, all about processes and walking through various steps. And again, with the idea of kind of getting to some financial statements. So there is a set of routine and you know, comfort in the process that's already there. But, you know, as you kind of get out into industry and, you know, whether it's scaling the finance team or getting in there at you know, ground level, I think the best thing I've ever heard was, you know, again, just get comfortable with the unknown. And you know, when you think your day is going to go one way and it goes the other, again, you know, don't get caught up in it. That's just the way that startup life is. And again, your to-do list is just always going to grow. So you know, that's really kind of what I've come to you know, understand with the startup world, and something that I really love about kind of my job and my experiences so far.
Right on. That's very, very good advice for sure. Well, thank you so much, Mark. It's been a pleasure chatting with you this morning. Thanks for your thoughts and your insight on, you know, managing various stakeholders on both sides of a product, from it being consumers to brands, as well as spending some time talking about your learnings at Shomi and what that process was all about, from launching a company as part of a larger organization to ultimately having to go through shutting it down and the learnings and insights that you drew away from that. It's really been an interesting and fascinating conversation, and I've enjoyed it a lot. So thanks again, Mark.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Awesome. Well, until next time, take care. Bye now.